episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Slack. Slack is a messaging app which brings together all your team's communication into one place, making work simpler and more productive. Go to slack.com to learn more. TextExpander helps you communicate smarter. Visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year. Welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, Mr. Paul Tharad. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Are you in Hitler's
bunker or something? Where are you?
I am. This is the end of the war. I am now in the bunker, and I'm waiting for liberation at this point from my job. I'm at my office.
If you had logos on the back of the wall there, it would look like a post-game conference after the NBA Finals. You can like bring your baby in and talk to the press. You're like, I think we really broke it down in the fourth quarter there.
It was rough in the third, but in the fourth, you know, the team stepped up and we did all the right moves. Thanks to the coach and the fans really for their support. No, I'm in my office and we're going to be redoing this a little bit more because I'm going to be doing a lot more shows from here because my demand here has gone up.
Sure. You're in demand. I'm
in demand here at the office, and I just got back from vacation. I was in Maine all weekend. I went there on Friday, and I came back, and this morning I woke up, and my eyes are bloodshot. I am 100% convinced there's something in my house that I'm allergic to, and it could be my family.
Yeah, yeah.
It's possible. I mean, I'm going to come a little closer here. Do you see this?
You're pink. You have pink eyes.
It's not pink eye. It's not
you look
pink
like the bad guy in one of those sci-fi video games. I'm coming up blank with the name. So.
Yeah. I look like I just spent about 10 minutes, you know, partaking in some a joint or something, you know. But I feel good, but my eyes are on fire. So if you see me blinking too much in this episode, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you're not sending the code to call the cops.
Yeah, that's what it means. Save me. A lot to talk about. Obviously, we did a show on Friday. And we were talking about the impending announcement of the Surface, that smaller Surface, which now we know it's called the Surface Go. It was announced, yesterday. And you have on hand with the Surface Go on your website.
On hand? Is that what I have?
On hand. Hands on.
Hands on. Hand.
Hands on. Which I want to talk about that. You guys took a trip to New York a couple of weeks ago, and this is why you guys were here. And I'm looking on the website right now. You and Brad had had an opportunity to touch it, play with it at this flagship store. And
you make it sound so obscene, Andrew.
It's so obscene. And I want to talk to you about your overall experience for the short time that you had this thing. Obviously, it's on a long-term review, but I do want to get your opinion on this. And a couple other things, obviously, from last week, we spoke about Andromeda. People were a little surprised at our stance on it. And I'm gonna give this little teaser before we dive into stuff. I think people are excited because it's a new device for the sake of it being a new device, and it's cool. You know, it's different. Yeah. So people are genuinely, you know, people are always excited for something like this. Obviously, I want to take a moment and talk about our great sponsor. And that's, here we go. John, if you could pull it up. There we go. Perfect. It's Text Expander. This is the beauty of doing shows live, ladies and gentlemen. This is why Text Expander is with us. You know, everything happens on the fly and everything is genuine that you see here. And I use Text Expander. Much like how I use everything that that I'm using right now. It's one of my day-to-day pieces of software that I rely on my Mac. It's also on Windows, obviously, but I rely it on my Mac because I do a lot of data entry stuff now. This is what my life has become, and I got to input these things constantly. I got to do it. And with Text Expander, I have short keywords for everything I want to do. So it's almost like a hotkey. So I do, let's say I'm doing a tweet, for example, and I want to write, you know, What the Tech is Live with Paul Tharad, blah, 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 blah. I just do WTT and I hit enter and boom, everything is filled out for me. It saves me so much time. And here's the cool thing about Text Expander. It multiplies your team's productivity by making up-to-date, shareable knowledge available instantly. When you use Text Expander, all your team's common responses are accessible, searchable, and all your simple abbreviations and hotkeys, you know, keyword shortcuts are all there. So you could have this, you know, shared amongst your team. So if you have four or five people doing the same type of stuff and they're constantly having to send the same emails or respond to the same emails, you could have the same hotkeys where everybody could use. Also, it's written and edited by the best writers. It's available on Mac OS, iOS, Windows, and for the web. Updates are immediate everywhere when modified. And here's a great offer. Visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year and to learn more. This is a great piece of software. I use it on, I don't use it on my phone, which I should install it on my phone, but I use it pretty much on all my devices now. And I was really suffering a couple of weeks ago because I had done a format on one of my laptops and I didn't have the software in there. So my brain was just kind of failing at everything I was doing because I become so reliant on this thing. It's awesome. TextExpander.com/podcast. I want to thank Text Expander for supporting What the Tech. Paul, now with the big story here. Surface Go. Last week or the week before you had your time with it. Give me your input on this.
Well, Microsoft had a device like this a few years ago, Surface 3. And it was kind of a non-pro Surface tablet, right? That device was hamstrung in a couple of ways. It had a slow Atom processor. It had really slow eMMC storage. And it used for a good reason at the time. Instead of using the Surface Connect connector for power and expansion, they used micro USB. The theory being that you're out in the world, maybe you didn't bring your charger, any phone charger of that day, which back then everything was micro USB on the Android side or on the Windows side, would work, you know. And it was only, it was only in the market for a year, maybe 18 months before Microsoft canceled it. And then in the fall of 2016, they went kind of all premium with the Surface Pro 4, Surface Book, and then subsequently they released Surface Laptop, Surface Studio, and these things were all kind of upmarket premium devices, and they really haven't had kind of a low-cost Surface device in about 3 years, two and a half years. So sorry, but to actually answer your question, Andrew, I guess like that's what I kind of went in to the meeting that we had with, you know, that in the back of my head, you know, that Microsoft had gone down this premium route. And so what does this mean? You know, how does this device fit in? Why would they do this now? Are they changing their Surface strategy and so forth? And I think there are a number of factors that led them to come back to this type of device. One of them being the crucial education market, which they are losing right now in the United States to Chrome and are about to lose internationally as well to Chrome. Apple obviously is also losing in education. They've had a big push over the past 2 years with their iPad, which education can now get for $299. It's a very basic device. It's a great content device, but it's not really good for an education or a productivity device, but they do have that price point. And I'm going to guess and say this one, no, they would never say this. I'm not 100% sure on this one, but I suspect that what wasn't happening that Microsoft wanted to see happen in this market was premium quality at a lower price point from their OEM PC maker partners. You know, there were really cheap education devices, and then there were really cheap consumer devices, and then there were okay kind of mid-market devices, and then there were a bunch of really nice high-end gaming PCs and other premium PCs. But what we're not seeing is an emphasis on the lower end of the market, and this is something that Microsoft internally, I do know actually on this part, was hoping to bring lots of Windows 10 features down to lower end devices. And so I think this is kind of their, it's not a new form factor, which is something they're really proud of doing when they can, but it is another thing that's central to the Surface vision, which is being aspirational and inspiring their PC maker partners and competitors to make better devices as well. And that hopefully this will trigger a collection of other PCs from other PC makers that are likewise of this level of quality.
You brought up something interesting that it's not a new form factor, but for the price point, it pretty much is a new form factor as far as quality goes for the device, like you said. I get asked this question all the time, and people always ask me, you know, what I want to buy a laptop. What do I buy under $400? and you start searching for it. And really, you're right. Right. When you said cheap, you said it perfectly. You didn't say inexpensive. You said cheap. No, and they're plastic and they're cheap. Yep. You know, I praise HP for their high end stuff, but when you look on the low end stuff, it does look plastic and it does look cheap. And you know, if you're buying something new, not refurbished or a couple of years old, this may impact. The hope is that it impacts the market, right, for the OEMs at this price point.
If you go back in time a little bit over a year, Microsoft had a really big education event in New York. And at that event, for some reason, they announced the Surface laptop, which has nothing to do with education. At the time, this was a device that started at $1,000 for a completely unusable configuration. It was really $1,200 or $1,300 for something that was decent. Next to the Surface laptop, they carted out some collection of Windows, PCs that could run Windows 10S. None of them did, but cheap, and I mean cheap, like you said, education devices from, you know, Lenovo, HP, Dell, whoever, all the big players, and they're cheap. And there was a real sharp contrast between the Surface laptop, which was three times as expensive, if not more, and these cheap education devices. Imagine how different that event could have been if this device was ready at this price point at that time. It would have been a nice premium alternative to those devices, which were typically, I think, were $299 to start, $350, $400 for, you know, a slightly better configuration. And here we have Surface Go now, which starts at $400. And it's really, you know, you want to spend about $550 to get the decent configuration, to get the really, and we can talk about why that's so. But I think that's a far more natural transition, both in pricing and in features and just in quality, just the basic quality of the devices.
So I'm on Lenovo's website right now.
Okay. And my goal here is not to crap all over PC makers, by the way.
No. But I want to see what they have currently in competition with it, right? I mean,
you're going to have to look at consumer devices then, right?
Yeah.
You're not really, they're probably not going to be selling. Well, maybe you could find them, but the education stuff is kind of vertical market stuff, you know?
Yeah. Let's see, by price, because HP has this weird thing on their website where it says starting price at $0.
Well, but the education PCs that Microsoft has been talking about start at two. I think it's $299, possibly as low as $199.
This is $399.
Yeah, but I'm talking about education. Like the thing you're looking at is probably something you might be able to buy at Best Buy. Okay.
So on HP site, and the only thing that comes even close to competing is $349, and it's a 15-inch AMD dual core A series. For $349. So it's not touchscreen. 4 gigs of RAM, 1 terabyte, AMD Radeon R3 graphics. Then everything else is Chromebooks.
It's a hard drive. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're getting killed by Chromebooks in education for good reason, right? They're inexpensive. They actually work really well. There's excellent management, et cetera, et cetera. So the education push that Microsoft is undergoing right now is a big deal, and there's lots of components to it. Suffice to say that what they've done is they've looked at what Chrome is doing, what Google is doing with Chrome, and they're trying to meet or beat that where they can. And of course, they have this thing in their pocket, which is just Windows, because Windows PCs are more full functional and are more powerful. And there are pros and cons to that because there are complexities to that functionality. But it is something, you know, true Excel compatibility, true Word compatibility, et cetera, is still kind of a big deal in some circles. So
here's my question. So the device is $399. How much is the type cover?
So the basic type cover, which is the black polyurethane, whatever the material is $99.
Okay. So that's
about $30 less than one. Yep. There are three different colors of a signature type cover for this device that are
$129.
Red, blue, and
so the reality is we're looking at about $500 and some change, $550, let's say.
I would say the reality is what we're looking at is about $650.
$650.
And the reason is there are two configurations of this device. There's the low end, the $399 version, which is Pentium processor, 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigabytes of eMMC storage, which is the thing that doomed Surface 3, really slow storage. I don't know why they did this. I guess to hit this price point, whatever, but that storage is the deal breaker. Also, you know, 4 gigabytes of RAM is terrible, you know, for Windows, frankly. So For $150 more, you can get double the RAM, which is great. 8 gigabytes of RAM is perfect. And you get 128 gigabytes of NVMe-based SSD storage, which is an order of magnitude faster than eMMC. So it's not just that you're getting double the storage, double the RAM. You're getting much faster storage. To the tune of, I don't even think that entry-level thing should exist. I think that really? Using that device will be a, yeah, it will be a punishment. Like, you should never get that device. If you've got a kid in school, whether it's a grade school student or a high school student or even a potentially a college student, if I guess if it was a smaller person, the thing is small enough with my giant hands, I can't even use it. But 4 gigabytes of RAM isn't going to last the year, let alone 4 years. And I think you need to get the, you know, the higher end version for virtually any scenario.
I am dying to know how well this thing will sell. And I think for it, you know what, out of all the times to announce this, perfect timing. We say that a lot about Microsoft, how they miss back to school constantly. Constantly. Okay. I mean, they habitually will miss it. And yeah. they kind of got it right this time, right? That this is the right time. It's July 10th. They have about a month of back to school shopping to go on. I'm sure Best Buy and I'm sure Microsoft and I'm sure all these other sites are going to start promoting this. There's probably going to be a backpack that comes with it at certain retailers. This is actually a good... this is actually probably one of the only times I could remember since doing the show that Microsoft has released a product at the appropriate time.
Interesting. I'll extend that a little bit and say, you know, the middle of July or the beginning of July, whatever you want to call this, is historically a very slow time for tech news as well. So they kind of got to own this time. There's nothing happening around it. You know, Google did their big
plan. This.
Maybe
properly.
I don't know. Google did their big developer event back in May. We had a bunch of Chrome related news back then. Apple did their big developer event back in June. But they also did that education event, remember, where they talked about the new version of the iPad, which adds pencil support and is still $299. I think it's $299 in education, right? And then $329 out in the world. I think it's the deal. That's a good price. Now, I sensed a certain confusion from the education arena to this announcement, because any educator would look at this device and say, what kind of a Pollyanna futuristic world do we live in when we're handing out iPads to kids in schools? Like, this is not a good education device. It's a good device. It's an excellent device. But it just doesn't make sense in this market. Surface Laptop didn't make any sense in this market. This device makes sense. And yeah, it's a little more expensive, right? And I think that's where the aspirational thing comes into play, because there are these, like I said earlier, these cheap kind of crappy plasticky PC laptops that are going up right now against Chromebooks. We're starting to see a market for premium Chromebooks happening, right? And I don't just mean the Pixel. Like, Samsung is now in their second generation. I think they just call it the Chromebook Pro. It's in the $600-ish price range, if I'm not mistaken. It has touch. It has the pen, you know, the pen support, smart pen support. It's a convertible form factor where the lid comes back over the device. HP introduced a device like this as well. And I think that's the real competition. Not just in education, by the way, but education probably being the big bucket market that all these guys are going after.
Yeah, I think, okay, so some of the things that I observed this morning, I was on the train, I was coming back, and I was just skimming through my Twitter. And
okay, your Twitter?
I was skimming through my Twitter. You're comfortable saying like it that way. Yeah, yep. It's skimming through my Twitter. You don't skim through your Twitter? Like this.
Yeah, okay.
I'm also making it rain like this.
Yes.
Very appropriate for where I am right now. I was on my phone and I was just quickly going through the news, and I thought I went back to the past on this train. This was a train to 2012, because I started seeing iPad killer, you know, Chromebook killer. And all I kept thinking to myself is, my God, you know, we don't learn. This is not an iPad killer. I don't see how this competes with the iPad. And I know everything competes with everything at this point. But to say that this is going to be the one that knocks the iPad out of education. First of all, the Chromebook is really leading it. Yeah. And cheap PCs are leading it more than anything else. I have kids. I know, you know, I have almost a 3-year-old now, and obviously that's not the, she's in school, but they're not incorporating iPads in the classroom. But my wife is an educator, and she sees how this works. And she actually, for all the positives these iPads do in the classroom, there's also a lot of negatives that are incorporated with this. Like, everything is locked down, and these kids are playing games essentially on this device. I don't think they look at a computer the same way as they look at an iPad. And this is from my observation and talking to other parents and other, you know, other educators. The iPad is always a consumption device, not a productivity device, in my opinion. This is from my observation. And I know there's going to be someone that says, I use an iPad for work every day. That you are a exception to the rule.
You are a special snowflake, and we celebrate you.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I had to get my car appraised because the lease is over. So the adjuster came to look at all the dings and whatever, and he had an iPad with him. And 2 years ago, the same guy or similar guy came with a laptop. This is where in the marketplace, the iPad makes total sense. When you have a special piece of software that's built for this, it's not, I don't know how much the iPad over the next 10 years of usage, case studies, how much it's going to impact the education market in a positive sense.
It's not. And I can state that with certainty. You know, the problem is when you say something like, I'm going to get work done on an iPad, or I'm going to be productive on an iPad, you kind of have to qualify what that means, right? If your job requires you to read and respond to email, and do things like that, you could do that on your phone. And people do that on their phone. Last week, I think I talked about buying a Casper mattress. I bought that on my phone, right?
That's amazing.
Whatever. So I did. I mean, that's just, it's a fact. So whatever. But I engage in what I consider to be traditional productivity tasks. In my case, by which I mean writing, literally writing, typing on the keyboard. There are people who use Excel who are accountants or other numbers guys, and they will never be able to use Google Sheets or the mobile version of Excel. They have to use desktop version of Excel because it has all the stuff they need that I don't in the slightest understand. And there's always going to be a market for that kind of thing. Everyone has their own little use cases. But the iPad as a general productivity tool is not a thing. It doesn't mean you can't do some productivity related tasks on the device. But what you said is fundamentally correct. It's a consumption device. And by the way, an awesome consumption device. And for my own iPad usage, most of it is reading, watching videos, but I can, and I do, read emails and respond to emails on it from time to time. I browse the web, that's reading. I can get calendar alerts on there. All that stuff's fine. Nothing is black and white. You know, there's always some little forms of usage. I think the trick with Surface, with Windows PCs in general, with Surface Go maybe in particular, is here's this thing that's sort of like an iPad. It's computer-based. It's a Windows operating system, so by nature, it's going to be more powerful and more complex. By nature, it's going to be more heavily tilted toward productivity tasks and less good at consumption tasks. Not because the form factor inherently is less good, but because the ecosystem there is just less rich. You can watch movies on it, right? YouTube is there. You can do all that stuff. It's fine. It works. Netflix is there.
It's a blessing. I know. There are people, like I took the trip to Maine. I drove and, we are very, aware of screen time with our kids. We're not one of these parents that believes in just throw the iPad at the kid and just let them watch themselves. Like, we don't believe in going to a restaurant and having a kid on their phone or the iPad. Like, we're very, listen, for someone that's in tech, I have a lot of pet peeves with technology and everyday usage.
I don't think it's unusual. I'm sorry.
I think for some people, the more heavily involved you are.
You know, there was an interesting article a couple of years ago, probably. It was about all of the scions of Silicon Valley, and then also Bill Gates, who's not really in Silicon Valley. And they interviewed all these guys, and they said, well, what's your attitude toward kids and technology? Most of them said, my kids don't have any technology. All of them said, for those that do, it's highly restricted. So here they are pumping out all this crap for people to get lost in. But when it comes to their own families, by and large, their answer was no. And I think the more heavily involved you are in technology, as you would be, of course, the more you understand that.
I'm conscious of it. I think when it happens, it happens. You know, when kids are going to need a phone, they're going to need a phone. That's just how it is. But as a parent, I think we need to be a little bit more responsible with, you know, dealing with our kid and not just saying, here you go, here's a laptop, or here's an iPad, just watch something on there and leave me alone. With that said, however, in the old days, what did you give your kid?
I was going to say, you would just throw the kid right in front of the TV.
Right in front of the TV. That's it.
Yeah. It's like, I need to cook dinner. Here you go. Watch cartoons.
Yeah. But with that said, to have a 2.5-year-old hysterical on a trip coming back from Maine and you're sitting in traffic, that iPad is a blessing. That is a moment. Yeah, that's the moment. No, that's the moment. You know, that's the moment that you say, okay, you know what? Here you go.
The old fashioned version of that, which is for a time we had an actual VHS player that a portable one that came in kind of a backpacky looking thing. We would string between the two front seats, and then eventually it was a DVD player. And then eventually it was a little tablet, you know, or a laptop, whatever. But, you know, because my kids are old enough for that to be the case. But same thing. You're driving back from Stowe, Vermont. It's 3.5 hours to Boston. Not listening to this kid freaking out in the backseat for two hours of that trip. So,
yeah.
You know, you have those moments too. And you're human.
Listen, I think I could talk about this for hours, but I do think technology affects us, and for every day, you know, every day humanity is affected by the technology that we use. And I don't know if it's a good thing all the time. You know, I was sitting at a bar and these guys were playing Flip Cup on their iPhones at the bar.
Flip Cup?
Yeah, like you know, like you not Flip Cup. You know, when you like throw the coin and it bounces into the bottle or something, like it's like one of those games. Have you ever played it? Like you throw something and it has to bounce, and it's like almost like beer pong. They're playing it on their phone at the bar with each other.
I'm thinking,
what is going on here? You know, you're sitting at a bar with your friends and you're on your phone and you're playing this game with each other. And I'm looking at the bar and everybody's on their phone. Everybody's doing one of these, you know, and you know, listen, we all do it, but at least be a little bit more conscious about, you know, putting your face in there. I saw a woman almost get hit by the car today, getting out of the train because she was on her phone. There's going to be a point that we start rejecting this and we start saying, okay, there needs to be common sense here.
You've described my career in search of common sense everywhere, you know, in all aspects of life. Just introduce a little common sense to the equation. Absolutely.
I got a question for you. So the Surface Me was supposed to come out a couple of years ago, and they actually produce these things.
That's right.
Where are they?
Various people at Microsoft have them. Yeah, they're out in the world. I mean, they actually manufactured the first batch to give to people like me, like to reviewers. That was why they made them.
Yeah.
They were pre-production units. You know, they're going to give them out to press, and then the product was canceled. And so those things that kind of never went out. But, you know, there's a weird debate, you know, because people are so pedantic, especially in Twitter and in tech circles. But I sort of made the case that it's obvious when you look at a Surface Go, you say, well, this is the new version of the Surface 3. It's a low-cost version of the Surface Pro. Obviously, that's what this thing is. But I think there's a more nuanced view of this because it's smaller. For one thing, it's smaller than Surface 3 was. And I think that this thing plays the role that Microsoft originally envisioned for Surface Mini, right? Which is a device that would be good at consuming content with whatever ecosystem was there. It would be good for note-taking. Right, it would be a small device that a child or someone in school could use with a pen and take notes on. I think those were the primary use cases for Surface Mini as it was originally envisioned. That thing was hamstrung by two things: the processor architecture, which was NVIDIA ARM at the time, and the operating system, which was Windows RT. And it was the wrong device, wrong time, you know, just bad timing.
Yeah.
This device isn't as small as that, but the market for 8 to 9 inch kind of mini tablets has dried up.
And a couple of years ago, when was it? 7 inch tablets, 8 inch tablets. But now, I mean, your phone is 6 inches now.
Yeah. There was a short moment in time, and it happened in the Windows 8 timeframe. It's Windows 8.1 right in there, where it looked like 8 inch ish Windows tablets were going to be a thing. And a bunch of companies made them. Dell probably made the best one. I think the Venue 8 Pro, I think was the name of it. And then it just disappeared. Those don't exist. And so some people, you know, they still want that thing. They still worry about Andromeda. They are disappointed that Courier never happened. And they look at this and they say, that thing's actually a little too big. But I think we've reached the point at which putting a keyboard on something stops making sense once you get smaller than this. The Surface Mini never had a keyboard. This one does. It's a small keyboard, but it's a full keyboard.
It's a full keyboard. I'm very interested to see how this does. Very interested.
I think it's going to do pretty good. I mean, I you know, this was, like I said, this is an area of the market where Microsoft needs to be, where the PC market needs to be. I hope that it's aspirational in ways that some other PC, Surface devices are. I hope that PC makers respond with their own versions of this thing. You know, you were talking earlier about the iPad, and I was, you know, I haven't gone and kind of looked at this, but if you look at an iPad Pro and how much that costs compared to this device, it's kind of night and day. And for all its limitations compared to a more full-powered Windows PC, this thing is a way better productivity device than an iPad Pro.
Absolutely. Listen, because you could actually, you know, it's a computer and not a tablet. You know, you could, if you need to pull up you need to download Chrome. I mean, obviously you could do it all of it, but at the end of the day, I think the trackpad, having a trackpad changes the environment, you know, having the availability to go into your desktop and have things there. I mean, you know, I say that as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, well, you could do it on the iPad. You could do this on the iPad. It has a file explorer. You could do all this stuff, but I feel like it's two steps more to do one simple thing. And that could be me using the device, but I can't be as productive on an iPad as I can on a laptop. I want to meet the person that can.
The flip side to this is, if you kind of look at it from the Microsoft, Windows, whatever side of the fence, there's an effort on Microsoft's part to make Windows simpler. And that was Windows RT originally. Then it was Windows 10S. Now it's called S mode. You know, they're trying to get to this thing where Windows works more like a device. It's simpler. We have these store apps that are known to be safe and good performance, yada, yada, yada. It is just never come together. You know, Windows 8 was the beginning of this push. Windows 8.1, first version of Windows 10. It's just not quite there yet. One of the many reasons this thing is running an Intel chip is so that it can run those desktop apps, which have just persevered. You know, people still need this stuff. It has to work. It has to work well. That's why it's not on a Qualcomm chip, right? It's just not there yet. As the iPad takes on more professional, more full function features, whatever, Windows is being, they're trying to make Windows simpler too. They're kind of converging from opposite ends to the same place, you know?
Yeah.
It depends on what the focus is. The iPad and even the iPad Pro are probably the better device if the primary use case is consumption. But a Windows PC, no matter what it is, or a Chromebook, which is the problem for Microsoft, are better devices if productivity is the focus.
Right.
Right. With some consumption. You're never going to do all of, some people will, but most people will do a little bit of both. It just depends what you're going to do more. And I don't know, you know, there's lots of stuff to look at on this device, how well video plays, what's available there.
Yeah.
What's the reading experience? You know, we don't have a good Kindle app on Windows.
I wonder if this will drive more mobile type, the developers to come over to the Windows side and develop for them. You know, a lot of these applications, I know that it's getting, the encouragement is there now and switching, you know, I don't know. I don't know if this is enough encouragement for mobile. I don't know what it means.
It's not, it doesn't look good. You know, I think the issue there is that we have lots of precedent. It goes back to Windows Phone, and then it went to Windows 8, like I said, you know, Windows 10, whatever, Windows Mobile. Microsoft has always had the same basic value proposition for developers, which is this: we're going to give you more money. You're going to have more of an audience to yourself. You can stand out and shine because this thing is small, and you'll get lost on the iOS App Store or in the Google Play Store. And there are absolutely a few people that have taken advantage of that and done well, but there are far more that have done much better on the other apps ecosystem. Yeah. So it's just one of those terrible things. Like there's some sense to it, but it just never has materialized.
Very interesting. I want to continue with the conversation, but before we do, I want to thank our sponsor, and that's Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub that lets you organize all your team's work into channels for everyone. It includes them for relevant information. It's a one-stop place for new team members to easily access and get up to speed. To learn more, go to slack.com. This is great because we were just having a conversation here at my job about Slack, and somebody said, what's that software that you're using? I said, it's Slack. The awesome thing is it connects your tools and services in one place. Slack allows you to organize your team with real-time messaging, video and voice calls, group file sharing, searchable archives, all in one easy-to-use application. And it also plugs in with Google Drive, Zendesk, Salesforce, things like that. And it works with over 1,000 applications with mobile apps for iOS, Android. It syncs seamlessly so you can pick up where you left off. It's awesome. For more information, go to slack.com to learn more. These guys are great. I absolutely love them. I want to thank Slack for supporting the show. Paul, are you ready for some more Andromeda talk?
So,
someone like should keep start bringing up
an Andromeda podcast. Let's talk about stuff that doesn't exist. Yeah. We can talk about the Loch Ness Monster. We can talk about Sasquatch. We can talk about Andromeda.
I saw the petition on change.org. I'm so glad that this requires a petition now to get it made.
Yep.
10,000 people, a whopping 10,000 people have signed it as of yesterday. I don't know what it's up to today. And I was just playing this game. I said, what percentage of people do you think would buy this? I would say it's 1-3% of those 10,000 people.
Well, I mean, the market for this device is incredibly small. The percentage of the people who would sign this petition and then actually go spend their own money on this is even smaller. I appreciate the effort. I like where these, I like where their head's at. I get it, but there's almost like a bullying nature to this. Oh, Microsoft's not doing what we want. We're going to start, we're going to start a petition and, guys, Microsoft's a big company. They understand the, whether it makes sense to make something or not. Actually, sometimes they don't. They haven't always. They've certainly made things that haven't sold well. This thing is not going to do well. It just isn't. It just doesn't make any sense. And serving that like small core market of Windows enthusiasts has never worked out well for them. The Groove Music Service, you can kind of go down the list of stuff that's like, yeah, there's a little audience for that, but does it make any sense?
No. Yeah, but they could have with the Groove Music Service, they could have gotten it right with Zune.
But they didn't get it right with Zune.
But they didn't Zune get it was, right. Too late.
No, they didn't. And there's still people that pine away for that or for, Windows Media Center. And it's like, guys, these were in fact the wrong products. they were actually wrong. And that's the thing I think people have a hard time understanding. When Microsoft made Windows Media Center, originally codenamed Freestyle, the question they asked each other on the eHome team at the time was, do we make this a Windows thing? Like we put it on PCs, which, complex, expensive, yada, yada, yada. Or do we do a device like the Xbox? Clearly, in retrospect, the right answer was you make an Xbox device, you make a TiVo, you make a thing. Without any of that complexity, but they didn't do that. And so Windows Media Center always had those terrible interfaces where you'd be sitting there with the remote, you'd click on something, and then a Windows dialog box would pop up, and you'd have to go find a mouse to go deal with it. It was the wrong system for what that thing was. And Zune was exactly the wrong thing at the wrong time as well. Yeah. It was just a copy of the iPhone with a hand in iTunes and a handful of unique features. It was me too. It was too late. And it was for a company that has no vested interest in this market.
They were responding to something that they really.
It was just an explicit example of Apple envy. That's all it was. I used it and loved it for years. Don't get me wrong. I don't mean to say I don't mean like I'm some kind of industry seer. Like I saw from day one, this thing was a piece of crap. Although, by the way, if you do go back and read my earliest things about Zune, I was really down on it when they first released it because of the way they did it. It was terrible. There was a lot of hubris over there. There was still this feeling at Microsoft that if they just did it, it was going to work. And it was really actually kind of crappy the way they launched Zune. But whatever, it got good. first version, I think, was garbage, but it did get good. The software got good. But, you know, the world went in this other direction, and as it does so often. And they're never in it for the long haul. I mean, it's amazing that they kept that thing going for as long as they did. It was so half-hearted the whole time.
I think, you know what it was? Everything was, they were so slow also, like that Zoom Touch, that should have come out how much longer? Like 2 years prior?
The HD one, yeah. So the tough thing about that is I remember going out to San Francisco and I saw that device and they gave me a review unit and I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Like, it was amazing. And then I found out some months later, maybe several months later, on the day that I went and saw those people in San Francisco and they handed me the hardware, that team that made it was already disbanded. They were gone. They were already out of the market.
So
they didn't tell anybody. Yeah. They had already given it up.
So, but they released this device.
Yeah. They just released this orphaned thing. You know, obviously there were some elements of that made its way into Windows Phone. There is a continuum, since we mentioned this stuff, that goes from a media center and related products that didn't go very far, like Portable Media Center, to Zune, to Windows Phone. A lot of the same people, a lot of the same ideas and user experiences and stuff. And you can see the evolution of that stuff. The Zune HD you mentioned was the first to have something that you would kind of recognize as like, oh, this looks like Windows Phone. You know, the Kin, you know, falls into this category, although that stuff was tacked onto that at the end. But
Windows Phone 6.5 also had some of those elements also.
Yes, right. And that,
some of those elements were
there too. Yeah, and as with Kin, that stuff was just tacked on. And that Windows Mobile 6.5, was tough because the surface of it, the front end, which was the lock screen and the home screen, were beautiful. And there was truly unique ideas going on there. But it was still based, it was just Windows Mobile, right? So once you got past those screens, all the user interfaces got tiny. You had to, you know, they were designed for like hitting them with a stylus. So they had these nice big touch points on the front end stuff. And then you get into the apps and wherever else in the system. It was like, what is this thing? It was just such garbage. But
have you seen this Vivo Next phone?
I have not.
So it has a pop-up selfie camera.
Okay.
And I've seen two other manufacturers do this. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, this is like the new, this is what, you, no, on the top. So the phone has a pop-up. Because it's not built into the screen, it actually pops up the camera on the front. And
where does it pop up from? So let me look.
The top. Yeah, it's called the Vivo Next NEX. And I fear that this is going to be the next trend.
Oh, you mean like right out of the top?
Right out of the top.
That's a good idea.
I wonder what.
Well, depending on how much you use your selfie camera, I guess. Like, I don't use my selfie camera a lot, so for me, that would be nice. And if you want that kind of bezel-less type display,
yeah, I feel like this is going to be the new notch.
I'm okay with this one.
You're okay with this one?
Yeah.
Interesting. I just saw it. I thought maybe you had spoken about.
No, I'd never even heard about this. That's funny. But no, I that is. That is an interesting idea.
Interesting, right? Yeah. I'm curious on how it'll. I'm curious as far as the quality goes, but I saw a couple of these, and it may be that pop-up cameras may be the next thing because you see it on these laptops, right? Yeah, you saw it. Yeah. It's on the Huawei laptop. Pops up from the bottom, which is ridiculous. See, but
I don't like that. Yeah, the problem is the lid of a laptop is a lot thinner than the thickness of a phone because the phone, when you think about it, is the whole device, right? So you're talking about something that could pop out of something that's the depth of the entire device, and so it could be okay. Since you've literally just told me about this, it looks like one of the downsides is the quality of the camera. It's still not that great. But to do this on a PC...
The quality of the camera would have to be a little bit better, right? If it's like a little external device that's not built into the screen.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this is fine. Like I said, I don't really use my selfie camera a lot. And if I, you know, if you had to pop the thing out to use it, that would be fine with me. That's fine.
I'm trying to find some other ones. I saw some other ones. You know, it's going to be a little quick show today since I'm here at the office today, but I did want to bring up some other topics that I had here. You had, you made a post, I'm trying to find it right now, about your smart home.
Okay.
The not so Which hidden not hell smart. Of smart home. Yeah, it says Brad's.
Brad wrote that one, yeah.
So, but I wanted to touch on this because I am encountering this. It's not as, you know, I started getting more over the last couple of years, you're getting more and more smart devices, right? Certain things control certain things, and you're trying to make sure everything is compatible with each other. And that's a whole issue of its own. And I have these issues with these lights that I have where, you know, the app doesn't work properly. You got to turn it off. You got to turn it on. So I kind of know the pain of it, but it is interesting how everything is becoming a smart device. Like I'm redoing my kitchen. So all of the devices that I'm putting in have a smart feature. Like the dishwasher has a smart app. And I'm thinking, does my dishwasher need a smart app? Is that necessary to have? Because and the commercial's phenomenal. You know, you see this guy at work and he's like looking at his phone. He's like, ah, man, I forgot to do the dishes tonight. So he does his dishes from his app.
Yeah, I don't think that's such a big deal. My own experience with a smart home, which is working on about a year now of kind of playing around with this stuff, is I don't know how you would handle this kind of thing, but I went to my wife and I said, look, we're moving to a new house. I want to do some of this kind of stuff. This is what I'm talking about. And she was very concerned about some of it. And I promised her that we would approach this in a smart way to kind of play off the term, meaning that in some cases, the smartest thing you can do is not to put smart technology someplace. Sometimes a light switch is just a light switch and it just works. It's simple. You don't need programmable, time-based, you know, whatever. It's a lunar eclipse, you know, turn the lights on, whatever.
Yeah.
There's always been these kind of smart home demos. Like Microsoft used to do one. They used to have a smart home kind of facility at their campus. And it was the type of thing where you could say, using the ingredients that you know we have in the house, what are some of my dinner options, you know? Or you would pull milk out of the fridge and it would do like a little RFID kind of thing. And when the milk didn't come back in, it would know that it was empty and it would automatically order you more milk or something like that. And there are some kind of niceties along those lines. So for the dishwasher, was it that you used that example?
It was a dishwasher.
The ability to be sitting in a restaurant and say, oh, crap, I forgot to do the dishes, and then to trigger it from your home is a nicety at best. Plus, it assumes you put soap in there or whatever.
I'm guessing it's
obviously.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah.
There could be a reservoir built into it, too. I don't know why we don't have those things, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, I just think in some cases, in many cases, it's not necessarily smart for it to be smart.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I joke about my refrigerator. Like in this new house, we sort of inherited this terrible refrigerator. And you know the way most refrigerator doors work, regardless of how it, like ours opens like this from the middle, a lot of them go from like a side. If you let go of the door, it closes. Like and when I say it closes, I mean it closes all the way. Like it closes, it seals. This one does not. And what it does is it beeps like a car backing up if you leave it open for
whatever
time, 30 or 60 seconds. I find it to be incredibly annoying. So I complained about this one time and my wife's like, no, she goes, that's a great feature. Like now we know the door is open. I said, Stephanie, it would be a better feature if the freaking thing just closed. Why doesn't it close? Like, why does it should just close? You know, like we have smart drawers in the kitchen. No, actually not here. We don't. But in the old house, we did. You go to IKEA or whatever, you buy like a new cabinet set and all the stuff. And it's like a light tap thing. You just kind of you push the drawer toward.
The cabinetry.
And it completes it pulls itself in. There's no danger to it. No human beings getting caught in this or whatever. It's you know, because I've gotten that complaint from people. You don't want people to get sucked into the refrigerator. It's not an alien monster. It's a plugged in refrigerator. There's no room in there for a kid. Anyway, my point is sometimes the smart stuff just kind of gets in the way.
And yeah.
My experience has been that, you know, like the other story, and I'm not making fun of my wife. My wife is smart and independent and just doesn't care about technology, right? So we go to bed at night, usually at the same time, but sometimes at different times. And for some reason, both of us do the rounds. Like we'll walk around, turn off lights, lock doors, and all that kind of stuff. And I noticed my wife, when she did this, would not touch one of the lights. So she turned off every light in the house except for the one in the den and the living room. And I would say, why don't you turn off that light? And she says, oh, it's attached to that Philips Hue thing. And I didn't think I was supposed to touch it. I said, it's a light. So okay. Turn it off like a light. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
But she didn't know. That's
awesome. You know? Oh, that's hysterical. We are going to wrap it up, but I, if you have 10 minutes, I do want to do the post show because I discovered an app, and I believe you mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, and I have to tell you, I was blown away by this application. What blown away.
Oh, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, we're going to find out. I'm going to leave a little teaser for the post show. If you're watching live, you can watch it. We're still going to continue. If you're watching this on YouTube or any number of our websites, you go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us there. It helps the show going. It supports the show. It makes me happy. I can buy eye drops because my eyes are on fire. Every penny matters, and you guys are unbelievable. For all things Paul, go to therot.com, one of my favorite websites in the world. One of the first things that I do every morning, and I read therot.com. I read that, and I go to the most fanboyish Apple site.
Which one is it?
Cure myself. I got a 9-to-5 Mac.
Yeah. They're not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're fine.
There are some decent.
All right, guys. Yeah, no, actually, 9-to-5 Mac is one of the better ones. That's it, guys. I'll see you next time.